This is a podcast from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a nonpartisan research institute that explores budget policies and issues affecting low and moderate income Americans. I'm Michelle Bazzi, and welcome to this policy briefing.
Good morning, everyone. This is Bob Greenstein from the Center on Budget, and we're talking this morning, of course, about the economic recovery package that is now on the Senate floor and subject of major debate. I'm going to make some opening remarks, and then we'll go to your questions. And when we do, there are a team of center experts here with me who will join me in answering your questions and who've been looking at various parts of the package. As you know, the package has been subject in recent days to mounting criticism. The criticism largely boils down to contentions that the package is too big, too sprawling with too many pieces and programs, that much of it isn't stimulus that will actually create jobs, either because elements in it aren't stimulative or because they'll take much too long to get moving, and that when you look at the package as a whole, that it's a rather incoherent mix of short-term stimulus and other wish list items. As I'll explain, much of this criticism actually itself reflects confusion about the economy, about what creates stimulus, and about what's in the package itself and why. Let's go to these criticisms. So the first and perhaps the most prominent is that it won't create jobs. Now, effective economic stimulus works by increasing the demand for goods and services at a time when there's insufficient demand to keep businesses operating at full capacity and for businesses to continue to employ their workers. Measures that increase demand for the goods and services that businesses produce stop the destruction of jobs and begin to put people back to work. This is generally needed not only while the economy is spiraling downward, but after it hits bottom and in the early and weak stages of the recovery from a long and deep recession. Many criticisms of the recovery package reflect a poor understanding of this process and these economic basics. For example, some critics argue that spending on safety net programs like unemployment insurance and food stamps may be humanitarian, but isn't stimulus, doesn't create jobs in the way that, say, cuts in taxes for businesses would. In fact, this argument is completely backward in a recession. When the problem is that businesses can't sell the goods and services they make, the way to reduce pressure on them to lay off workers is to give their customers more money to spend. When you increase benefits for unemployed workers or food stamp households, they spend the money quickly and the benefits spread through the economy. That spending is what creates incentives for businesses to preserve and create jobs in a recession. Tax cuts, particularly for businesses, don't really do that. The firm, no matter how big its tax cut, is being irresponsible to its shareholders if it employs more workers than it needs to produce the goods and services it can sell. If there aren't people to buy the goods and services, the firms will not retain workers whether they get a tax cut or not. If you give them tax cuts at a time when they can't sell their goods or services, they simply retain or park the cash or provide it as bigger dividends to shareholders who tend to be people at high income levels who, the research clearly shows, save rather than spend a large share of the money that they get. Critics are similarly confused about fiscal relief measures for states. Again, this is described by some as not being stimulus and not creating jobs. And again, that's backward. In a downturn, states see their revenues fall. In the current recession, they are really falling markedly, as are local revenues due to declining property tax revenues due to falling property tax values. At the same time in a recession, demands on states for basic safety net programs rise. Yet unlike the feds, states must balance their budgets even in recessions. So during recessions, what states do is they cut programs and they raise taxes, actions that translate into layoffs of state workers, cancellation of contracts with vendors, reductions in state purchases, actions that reverberate throughout the economy, adding to job losses, further weakening economic activity. We estimate that states currently face budget shortfalls projected at more than $350 billion over the next 2.5 years, a stunning amount that will translate into budget cuts and tax increases that will make the recession deeper and that threaten to counteract a substantial part of the effect of a federal stimulus package. Hence, the necessity as stimulus to preserve jobs of robust state fiscal relief, which would reduce the job losses and reduction in economic activity that would otherwise occur as a result of very large state budget cuts and state tax increases. Infrastructure is more readily understood as creating jobs. The issue there, of course, is to find those infrastructure projects that where the money can be spent, most of it in the next 2 or 3 years. And again, the contrast is large between the impact of these kinds of measures in creating jobs and some of the alternatives that are suggested, such as more tax cuts for firms and more tax cuts for people high on the income scale, in both cases where money would generally be spent rather than saved. Now, the second criticism, as I mentioned earlier, is that the package is just too sprawling, that it has too many programs. What is Head Start doing here? What is child care doing here? What do they have to do with stimulus? Again, the criticism reflects misunderstanding. Economists from across the political spectrum, looking at whether it's Goldman Sachs, Moody's, the Congressional Budget Office, looking at the projections of how much the economy will go down and how big the slack, how much unused capacity there will be in the economy, are saying that we need a stimulus package of $800 billion, $900 billion, some economists say $1 trillion. There's only so much you can do in infrastructure, for example, that will actually be spent in the next few years. My understanding is the Obama White House took some of the early infrastructure figures and reduced them because when they scrubbed them, they found that some of the wish list infrastructure numbers that had been floating around included projects that wouldn't and couldn't be done in the next few years. There are limits to how much you can do in unemployment insurance and food stamps. One doesn't want to do so much in fiscal relief that you close all of states' budget holes and lead them to think they'll be entirely bailed out in any recession. This package, for all the state fiscal relief it has, actually closes a little under half of state budget holes, leaving states still very tough action to make. You can add in some tax cuts that you think are targeted on low and moderate income households who spend rather than save most of their tax cuts. You put it all together, you are still very well short of $700 or $800 billion. If the economy necessitates a package of that size, policymakers then must cast a broader net. They should at that point appropriately look for other programs that are meritorious, not wasteful in their own right, and where the money could actually be spent injecting more demand into the economy in the next couple of years. And by and large, not that there aren't any exceptions at all in the package, but by and large, that's what they've done. When programs like Head Start and Child Care have suffered funding losses in recent years, have tightened their belts and actually laid off workers, increased money that creates increased slots for children results in hiring more workers for those programs, for the child care centers or Head Start centers, and those workers spend their paychecks in the economy. These items are stimulative. It isn't the case that one can get to a well-designed package of this size with only 5 or 10 or, frankly, even a couple of dozen program entries. If you tried to do that, you would have more money in the programs that were in the package than they could usefully spend in the next couple of years, while leaving out of the package a number of smaller items that could productively spend the money and inject it into the economy in the next couple of years. A fourth criticism is that this package is a large permanent expansion of the federal government. But very little of the spending authority in the bill extends beyond 2011, and the evidence from past stimulus legislation is that temporary measures such as unemployment insurance or state fiscal relief, which was provided in the last downturn, are allowed to expire once the economy recovers. There is no instance I am aware of in any past recession where things like unemployment insurance, fiscal relief to states were provided and were not allowed to expire. The area where we've had that problem in the past is in tax cuts, as when one of the justifications used for the 2001, but particularly the 2003 tax cuts, was that they would help us get out of the recession, and as soon as we were out of the recession, the case was, well, of course, they have to be made permanent. Yet another criticism is that the package is very slow acting, that it doesn't have its impact when the economy is down. This argument was largely put to rest earlier this week when the Congressional Budget Office released estimates showing that 94% of the effects of the bill that came to the Senate floor and 85% of the effects of the House-passed bill would occur in 2009, 2010, and 2011. Now, some may say, well, should it really extend that long? The answer actually is yes. If you look at the recent CBO forecast, as well as other economic forecasts, virtually all of those key forecasters are showing big unused capacity, big economic slack through 2011. You want the stimulus to be smaller in 2011 than in previous years and to be phasing down and out. But in fact, the case is strong to still have significant stimulus in that year. A final criticism is that the package ought to have more in the way of tax cuts and less in the way of government spending. This criticism is primarily ideological. It is an argument that when the economy is strong, tax cuts are better than spending. When the economy is weak, tax cuts are better than spending. When the economy is in the middle, tax cuts are better than spending. Now, we can argue, or one can debate, about situations in non-recessionary times. Here we're talking about a deep recession. And in a deep recession like this one, mainstream economic thinking is clear that to inject demand into the economy, well-designed spending measures tend to be significantly more effective than tax cuts for the simple reason that is noted, much of tax cuts are saved rather than spent. This is why three independent assessments of various stimulus options, Goldman Sachs, Moody's Economy.com, and the Congressional Budget Office, all paint the same general picture, rating things like unemployment insurance, increases in food stamps, aid to fiscal relief to states and infrastructure as high bang for the buck, effective stimulus, some faster than others, and rate tax cuts lower, with those individual tax cuts that focus on low and moderate income families scoring the highest among tax cuts, and tax cuts focused on affluent families and business tax cuts scoring the very lowest of any options of all. So what we're seeing now on the Hill, ironically, are criticisms that the package isn't effective enough as stimulus, often accompanied by amendments to make it less so. Example, let's take out the $500, $1,000 per couple tax cut that the president proposed that's in the packages and substitute a proposal to lower the two bottom tax rates. Well, if you lower the two bottom tax rates, it's only the top 20%, the highest income 20% of households, that get the full tax cut. A married couple with two children and an income of $100,000 would get a $3,400 tax cut, while a family at $30,000 a year would get a $200 tax cut, 1/17 the amount. That's exactly backwards for how you preserve and create jobs in a recession. So we'll see how this plays out in the days ahead. But again, our particular focus this morning, although we're happy to answer questions on whatever issues on the package you want to ask, our particular focus this morning comes out of our concern that a number of the criticisms really reflect some misunderstanding of the economics of recessions, effective stimulus, and the contents of the package itself.
Thank you for listening to this policy briefing from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. You can follow us on Twitter at Center on Budget, find us on Facebook, or create a My Center account at centeronbudget.org.